They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, faithful listeners and adoring fan base, to Magellan's at the Movies, the most up-to-date, hip, and with it podcast that covers movies probably in all of America. I'm your host, Nathan Mogulyans, joined as always by my co-host and co-brother, Elliot Mogulyans. Elliot, I have one question for you. Yesterday, two movies were added to Netflix, and I'm wondering if you are planning on watching these things. The first one is Noah Baumbach's new movie, J. Kelly, has been added to Netflix, as well as Richard Linklater's new movie, New Wave in French, Nouvelle Vogue, or whatever it is. Are you interested in these? Are you planning on seeing them? Are you planning on maybe hoping to see them in theaters instead of on Netflix? You know, what are your thoughts here?
I'm definitely interested in J. Kelly. I think it's going to be at, like, a specialty theater near me.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Are Noah Baumbach movies that cinematic in that way? I don't know. Plus, it costs money, so I'll think about it. I'm definitely planning on watching it.
Yeah.
I don't give a fart about Nouvelle Vogue.
Oh, good.
So, no.
Dang. It's probably one of the most impactful film movements in the history of film, though, Elliot.
Whoop-dee-doo.
Not that. I don't think the movie's really about that. My sense is it's really just a regular Richard Linklater hangout movie, but set during the filming of a very trend-setting movie.
Isn't it, the flip is it called?
Breathless?
Yeah, dude, I hate Breathless.
I think hate is kind of a strong word. I don't really love it, but I think hate was not what I would say I feel towards it.
That movie has one of the most infuriating main characters I've ever seen. Like, when he, spoiler alert, dies at the end, I was like, way to go, guys. Let's double tap him, make sure he's down. Wow. Good job.
Interesting. I mean, that was what was kind of novel about, not the fact that they killed him, but I think part of the French New Wave was that the main characters were worse people than you would find in a Hollywood movie, which I think is what combined.
It's not that he's a bad person, it's just that he's annoying. He's a whiny little useless so-and-so.
Well, maybe this movie will open up a new window to your perception.
Yeah, Godard will be like, now it's very important that this character be a whiny, useless so-and-so, and here's why.
That's funny. Yeah, I don't know, I don't think I'm planning on seeing either of these. I know there's a theater near me that's going to be playing J. Kelly, but I kind of agree with you that I don't know if Noah Baumbach movies are must-see cinema, and it does cost money. But maybe I'll watch it on Netflix, and it'll be so good that I'm like, I have to support this film, so I have to go and watch it in theaters. But yeah, and I'll definitely be seeing the Linklater movie as well. I'm a Linklater head, what can I say? I did want to give a shout out here that I finally got around to seeing Yorgos Lanthimos' new movie, Begonia, And I loved it. Yorgos is back. This is my favorite Yorgos movie since The Lobster. I think it is super funny. I think it's super interesting. It's got two incredible performances from Jesse Plemons and Emma Stone. Just really well-made movie. If it's still in theaters, I'm kind of surprised it stayed in theaters for as long as it has. But if you have been on the fence about seeing it, I think definitely you should try and go and see it, because the movie is also, it's a fun ride. It's got a lot of interesting twists and turns, and a very good movie. Also, I went with friend of the podcast, Jake Brend. He also enjoyed it, so. And he's a Yorgos hater, so, you know, that's my pitch to you, the listeners.
Wow. Yorgos is back after fumbling the ball epically with Poor Things. That's right, I said it.
Well, he made a movie in between that and this, though.
Oh, right. That movie's probably trash as well.
Guides of Kindness is okay. I like it more than Poor Things.
Well, anyway, I saw a few things that I'd like to give some shout-outs for. I'm going to do this from worst to best. Okay. I didn't hate any of these, but still, I'm going to start out with the most mediocre one. That's going to be The Running Man, Edgar Wright's new movie, based on a Stephen King book that I have read and I do enjoy. This movie was fine. It was entertaining. It's the most generic Edgar Wright movie you'll ever see, although Nathan tells me that Last Night in Soho is also very unusual in his filmography. So maybe we're seeing a new era of mediocrity from Edgar Wright. So get excited for that.
Yeah, exactly what you want your acclaimed directors to enter.
Yeah, but really liked, I'm liking Glenn Powell, man. I've enjoyed him in everything I've seen. I think his best role, it's probably Dark Knight Rises, when he has like two lines and he gets beat up by Bane, but this is also good. He's very charming. And of course, he's ridiculously good looking. The other movie that I watched was Predator Badlands. I almost said Prey Badlands. And this movie's good. It's definitely good. I wrote a review for it for the blog, so please go and check that out. But yeah. I'll give you the long and short of it here and say that when this movie works, it works. When the Predator is just doing Predator stuff, it's cool. The action is slick and fun. The special effects are flashy. But there are certain stylistic elements grafted onto the movie that seem to be heavily borrowed from Marvel. And I didn't jive with that. And there are parts of this movie that I found pretty darn annoying. But on the whole, I do think it's worth seeing. The soundtrack, holy cow, the music is great. You best believe I've been listening to the soundtrack casually since I watched it. So, yeah, the movie's, it's very well positioned, because it cost, for modern movies, a positively thrifty $100 million.
Yeah.
It's already made, I think, like $85 million, so it does not need to set the world on fire in order to do very well for itself. And it seems like everyone likes it. Most people like it a lot more than I did, so, right? Yeah. Don't listen to me. Go see it. Come to your own conclusions. Don't listen to the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. Don't listen to the idiots on YouTube. Don't listen to this idiot speaking to you right now. Just watch it and form your own opinions. But by far, my favorite thing that I watched recently, it's got to be the 4-part Netflix miniseries, Death by Lightning. Have you heard about this, Nathan?
Yes, about, it's the president who got assassinated. Garfield?
Yes, James A. Garfield.
I'm so good at this.
Wow, someone's honking outside.
Yeah, some car issues.
Jeez. It's kind of a braided narrative about the campaign, or the nomination campaign and then presidency of Garfield, as well as the path of Charles Guiteau, the man who would eventually assassinate him, his path to assassinating him.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I don't know a whole lot about this history, but I've been reading up on it and watching videos about it, and it seems to be broadly accurate. It's one of those things where the major plot points is basically what happened, but the stuff in between, the like details, there's some narrative license being taken. But yeah, it's really well, it's got some really good production values. The performances are great. Michael Shannon plays Garfield. Nick Offerman plays Chester Arthur. That's hilarious. Matthew McFadden plays Guiteau. Everyone's great. It's got lots of rousing speeches about freedom and the promise of America. And yeah, I liked it a lot. I turned my parents onto it. They enjoyed it as well. I know that Lydia, the Magellan sister, is watching it. So it comes with the stamp of approval of over half of the Mogollon's family.
Yeah, and you're only telling me about this now. I'm hurt.
Oh, sorry. I honestly didn't think it would be something that you would be interested in.
Well, maybe. That's an interesting thing to make a series about, because I don't see a lot of people ever talking about Garfield as president, despite the fact that, he was an interesting enough president that someone wanted to kill him, which I think is notable. So maybe I'll find time to see it. Elliot, I had one final note of this banter section.
This is an extended intro.
Well, this is going to be short. I just wanted to know, did you see the trailer for the Super Mario Galaxy movie?
No. No, I didn't.
Dang. I was going to be interested because I think something we talked about in our review of the Super Mario Brothers movie is kind of the stunning lack of references or things from the games, specifically the more modern sorts of games, that there was very little reference to Super Mario Sunshine, Super Mario Galaxy, Super Mario Odyssey. And obviously, if you couldn't guess by the name, this movie is taking much more, seemingly, from the games. They've already shown that there's a zone that was in Super Mario Odyssey is in the movie, Rosalina is in the movie, Bowser Jr. is in the movie doing kind of Mario Sunshine type things. Obviously, Mario Galaxy, they've already shown them using Comet Star, or what are they called? The shooting stars you jump in to go from planet to planet. Got that. They've got clearly planets that are Mario Galaxy planets, little orbs that you can run around and stuff. So I'm not super optimistic about it, but I do think it's interesting that this is the direction they're taking. And rumors, I love this rumor because it's so stupid and I don't see how it could work. But the rumor is that Nintendo does want to build to a Super Smash Brothers movie, which I think is so funny and terrible of an idea that I just really want to see it happen.
Yeah. If they make that happen and the antagonist is Taboo, I'll be there.
Yes. I'll be seated.
There opening night, front row.
That'd be so funny.
I won't be seated, dude. I'll be on my feet.
Clapping the whole movie through.
Applauding, cheering. Everyone will hate me.
Yeah. No, that would be
sick. Man. And if they do. Oh, gosh, you've just activated a treasure trove of memories for me. If they do, if they introduce each character the way they did in Brawl with the, like, freeze frame and the really punchy sound effect, that would be so awesome.
When we played, this is way off topic, but when we played Subspace Emissary, the story mode in Super Smash Bros. Brawl, I think I probably knew who maybe, like, 40% of the characters were. Like, when Snake showed up, I had no reaction. I was like, yeah, dude, it's a dude in a box. That's crazy. Whatever. When Sonic showed up, I had never played a Sonic game, and so I was like, oh, Sonic's in this game. That's neat, I guess.
Yeah, he shows up late.
Very late. So I would love if the movie could recapture that sense, only pulling characters from video games I've never played and don't care about, so I could be like, dude, it's that guy from Deltarune, or something like that.
Mr. Game & Watch.
Yeah. Anyway, Elliot, let's get to actually reviewing the movie that we're supposed to be talking about here. We've spent too much time bantering. Introduce the audience to, you know, what is this movie? Why did you pick it? And let's as it were, as if we were at a pool on a board, let's dive in.
All right. So today we are reviewing Blue Ruin. This is a indie movie. So indie that it was created via Kickstarter.
Wow.
Directed by Jeremy... Uh-oh.
Yeah, good luck.
Saulnier, maybe he's
nice.
French.
Yeah.
Released in 2014, and it follows a young man, or actually probably a more closer to a middle-aged man,
mm-hmm.
Who his parents were murdered, and the man who murdered his parents is released from jail. And so he goes on the prowl for vengeance. So it's your classic crime drama revenge movie. But this movie did very well for itself critically when it released. It got lots of plaudits. Everyone loved it. And it didn't make much of an impact. Like, I heard about this movie first from a movie podcast that I listened to. Trust the judgment of this podcast, so I watched the movie, and I enjoyed it a lot, and I wanted to do something a little more, a little more indie for my pick, and I thought I would drag Nathan along and force him to watch it and see what he thought, and I'm very interested, Nathan, to hear what you think about this movie, so please do give us your opening thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought was, this is an incredibly indie movie. I had not heard of this movie until you picked it, which is saying something, because there's very few movies that I hear about that I'm like, I've never even heard of that. And really, my only connection that I could forge is I've heard of Green Room, a later movie from this director that I've heard a lot of people really like. So I was very interested going into it, and yeah, I enjoyed this a fair bit, Elliot. I thought it was... I love indie movies sometimes because it's so fun for me to see how great of a movie you can make with so few resources, right? That this movie doesn't use a lot, but gets a lot out of it. Like, it's very minimalist, and I think that is a style that really complements the revenge story, especially this type of revenge story that's very, it's not very flashy, it's very granular. It kind of reminded me of No Country for Old Men in terms of its attention to details, where, right, when a character gets hurt in this movie, they have to go through all of the pieces of getting fixed. That one character gets shot in the leg by a crossbow, and it goes through the whole process that he has to do to get the crossbow bolt out and fix his leg a little bit and do some stuff. And I love that attention to detail, because it makes the movie feel very real and very authentic. And yeah, I think it's a really... It's also a movie that shows if you have a compelling story, if you have a good story, then you can just get so much mileage out of this. That the movie takes like a classic sort of story that everyone can kind of instantly identify and does it in an interesting way. I don't know if this is a huge spoiler, but he kills the person who is released for his parents' death very early in the movie. And so the fact that most of this movie takes place kind of post-revenge is really interesting. And it's, you know, they get a decent cast, some money, a good concept, and look at this. They make a really good movie. I love how movies are like that, that sometimes people just make something. And I love going to see the Dune Part 2s where someone's, you know, throwing tons and tons of money, and it's incredible what you can see when people have a lot of resources to make a really amazing movie. But I also think it's really incredible to see what people can do with very few resources that's, like, just as good.
Wow. Well, that's very interesting. That puts me in the unusual position of, I think, maybe having enjoyed the movie that I picked a little bit less than Nathan.
Wow.
Because let me tell you that my first reaction, when I first saw this movie, I had the exact same reaction as you. I thought it was great. It was a fresh twist, I thought, on some well-worn tropes. Mm-hmm. It did a lot with a little, and I came away from it thinking, wow, what an excellent movie. And I still think that it's, I still enjoyed it, right? I still think it's very good, above average.
Mm-hmm.
Well above average. But I do think that the movie suffered a little bit on rewatch. And this is going to pose an interesting problem for me, because, like, how much would you factor into your rating rewatchability? Because I'm guessing for a lot of people, if they just watch this movie once, they would be like, oh, that's great. It's just on rewatch when I thought, okay, there, I felt like with the novelty stripped away, or at least reduced, I was like, oh, some of these sections are a little long, and some of the it reminded me a lot of Night of the Living Dead, right? Night of the Living Dead, that's a great movie, but when we, it's even on our best of the 60s list.
Yeah.
But when we reviewed it, we both agreed that the sections where, right, Ben is just preparing defenses while someone on the radio is talking probably didn't need that. And that's probably, right, a consequence of the movie's shoestring budget. And I think the same thing applies here, where I was, like, the part where he was fixing himself up, having been arrowed, the first time I was like, oh, this is just like No Country for Old Men. My favorite movie of all time. It's great.
That's just what I said.
I know. And this time I was like, oh, this is a little more wheel spinny than I remember it being. So yeah, also there's a character in this movie who I think probably more could have been done with him. But on the whole, I still enjoy this movie. I still think it's really good, above average. And let's probably start with the movie as a revenge film. And we're going to spoil this. This is a spoiler podcast. So yeah, if you want to watch the movie, which I recommend you do, it's very easy to get a hold of. It's on like a dozen free streaming channels. So, yeah. And it's a lean, mean 90 minutes. So, right, do it. Just do it. It'll cost you, it'll barely cost you any time.
Yeah.
But yes, we learn, I think the, like, in the revelation that ushers in the third act is that, and something that's been implied and foreshadowed before that, is that the man who went to prison for killing Dwight, main character, Dwight's parents, is not the man who actually did it. And in fact, it was the father of this, I guess, criminal family. Because they don't seem like good people. Who killed Dwight's parents because Dwight's father was having an affair with this man's wife. I think his name's like Cleland Sr. or something. And so Cleland Sr. is already dead. He died of cancer years ago. And so in a very real sense, there is no point to any of this. And movies about revenge, where the ultimate, where revenge is critiqued to a certain extent, they're a dime a dozen, right?
Yeah.
But I think that this movie does something very smart in that in most revenge stories where they're like, revenge is bad, by the way, it's mostly about, like, right, it's doing bad things, it's making this the main character into a bad person, but the problem, at least for me, often arises in that, like, okay, well, this person who they're getting revenge against is, like, bad, and the people would probably benefit from them being incapacitated in some way, shape, or form. But this movie, I feel, actualizes its themes in a very intelligent way, in that it really is, like, there's no point to this, but Dwight is just so ruined. He's a ruin of a man, huh? He's been so bent on this for so many years, and it turns into a mess that there's no way out of. That's what I think. I was gonna actually start you off with what you think, but then I ended up just saying what I think. So Nathan, what did you think about the way this movie treated its classic story of revenge?
Yeah, I liked it for a lot of the same reasons you said. I like the move to have the guy who Dwight would want revenge against already be dead. I did find it funny there at the end where he, like, chugs water so that he can pee on his grave. That I just thought that was kind of a funny little touch. But I felt like the line that kept coming to my mind and continues to come to my mind as I think about this movie is what Dwight's sister tells him as she is leaving, that she says that she's forced to leave her house with her kids because he's killed this guy, and now the crime family is going to try to get their just desserts, that they're gonna try and do to him what he did to them, and they're maybe gonna try and kill his sister or kill his sister's kids. And she tells Dwight that it would be easier for me to stomach this if you were crazy, if you were insane, and, like, your problem is just that you're not all there. But that's not your problem, it's that you're weak. And I think that's really interesting that, you know, like Elliot said, revenge movies are a dime a dozen, and almost every one of them is like, it's kind of not great. But a lot of them also say that they're like, but, you know, might as well, like, if you can. And so I thought that was very interesting, where her assessment of him is accurate, that I think in general it takes a lot more strength to be able to forgive a person and move on in a healthy way than it does to simmer in anger and continue to want bad things for a person. And certainly she's in a better way than him, and especially in this last leg of the movie where he's kind of lost any reason to be continuing to do this. Like, the guy that he kind of kidnaps one of the family at one point, and this guy basically tells him, like, hey, we're not going to kill your sister. Like, we're not going to go after your sister. It's just between you and us. And so there at the end, the climax is him going to the house and, like, killing the rest of the family. He has no reason to be doing this outside of just a general, you know, dislike for the family. And so I thought it was very well done. And especially the, you know, again, it's kind of the classic revenge movie ending where everyone's dead and the final feeling of the movie is like, well, that was kind of pointless. Like, everyone's now just dead. Why none of this was worth what it cost in human life to do. And so I thought it was very good. I think there's some parts of this that are better than other revenge movies, but, you know, also some other parts where it's just like, yeah, this is classic revenge movie stuff.
I agree. The main character is very hurt blockery in that he has become addicted, or at least in some way dependent on the need for revenge in order to sustain him. It's what he lives for. And so, right, he's homeless. He eats out of dumpsters.
Yeah.
He's just in a really bad way because, I swear I'm not trying to make these puns. Just can't think of a better word for it. He's been ruined. He was ruined or devastated or I don't know. I'm bad at synonyms. He was ruined by death of his parents, and he can't see any way out. Even though we as the audience hopefully realize that he could connect with his sister, right? Try out therapy or something. I don't know. Yeah. Give it a try something other than extrajudicial killings, mm-hmm. which ends up just making things worse. And I think that we've said a few times on this podcast, or at least I have, that you can cover for a lot of tropiness and cliches in your story if you just tweak a few things, right? Mm. Like Godzilla 2014. Not the most innovative story or characters in the world, but the way that Godzilla and the monsters are framed and filmed is so unique that it makes the movie for me. And if I remember correctly, for Nathan as well.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing is happening here, that not a whole lot of stuff that happens in this movie is unusual, right? The movie is definitely firmly within the tradition of neo-Westerns in terms of its verisimilitude. Jones is the movie's favorite word.
Actually, let me just interject real quick. They use the word in Begonia, and I felt it felt the same as the one Barbie joke about people over-explaining stuff in The Godfather, that I was like, oh my goodness, it's me. I use big words.
Okay, thank you for that valuable contribution, Nathan.
You're welcome.
Now you've made me forget what I was saying. That a lot of the stuff that happens in the movie is recognizable, right? The interrogation of this guy, the bloody revenge, the bloody standoff at the end. Mm-hmm. But the way that it's framed narratively is through the lens of this all being, in a very real sense, pointless and needlessly destructive. And so that, right, it makes the movie. It carries you through, or at least it carried me through, even knowing that it was happening. It still carried me through those sections that where I was thinking, right, all right, this is a little slower than it needs to be. And sometimes I was kind of wondering, right, this movie's 90 minutes long. Did they just need to fill time? Mm. I don't think it's a possibility that we can just dismiss out of hand. But even having said all that, I was still gripped by Dwight's story and by the story that the movie was telling.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of a lot of... I like your comparison to Night of the Living Dead, because I think this is very similar to a lot of other very low-budget, ultra-indie sort of movies that I'm thinking of, like Christopher Nolan's first movie, Following. I think of, like, this one came out last year, but... Or not last year, maybe in the last couple of years, Hundreds of Beavers, where part of the fun of watching the movie is knowing that they made it for nothing. And so the only thing they have to stand out and be recognized and get further in the industry is they have to have a really good concept. And I think this movie has a really good concept that I agree carries it through some of those moments where you're like, this is not quite as strong. And I think there's some moments for me in the movie where it feels so minimal that it kind of loops around to where I'm like, I think nothing is being said here that I think particularly of, like, the interactions between Dwight and Ben, that this is where maybe in a different movie, right, there'd be more conversation that Ben is clearly has an interesting ethical framework or has a moral framework that he's using as he interacts with Dwight and kind of helps Dwight get ready for the final confrontation. And there's moments where I'm like, this is, I feel like you're saying something by not saying something, but I feel like you're saying nothing. That there's actually genuinely just nothing happening here. And it's not just like, oh, it's so minimal. It's like, it feels like nothing.
Hmm. That's interesting, because I enjoyed Ben, because I thought it was funny. Okay. Yeah, it's... I think it's... He is interesting to me, if for no other reason than because quite a lot about him is gestured to without fully explaining. Mm. Like, Dwight asks him, have you ever killed anyone? And he says, two on purpose. That's real. That's interesting, right? That's the kind of thing that interesting people say, and also criminals say. But yeah, I appreciated that I thought that he added a bit of flavor to the movie, because most of the characters up until that point had been fairly morose in the same kind of way. And so I appreciated that he was a little bit more energetic. For me, the moments where I was most, like, where I was most wondering, is this just here to get this to a acceptable length, are the extended sequences of, like, Dwight in his sister's house just kind of hanging out, or, Dwight making a first attempt to heal up his leg and then ending up in the hospital and then leaving and coming all the way back and all this time. I think that section for me, I'm just sort of realizing this right now, that section for me was especially hard to get through. Not hard to get through, but it was notable because I was, right, we have something very interesting in the offing. That Dwight has a hostage at that point, locked in the trunk of his car. And so I, as a member of the audience, was like, oh, I really want to get to this. I want to hear what this guy has to say and see how Dwight handles this. So I think that the verisimilitude in that point, at that point, was hurting the movie more than helping it, because I felt like I was kind of being denied. We were kind of burying the lead of what was most interesting to me about what was happening in the movie at that point.
Sure. I think that seems fine. Well, and I think, to kind of your point that you said at the very beginning of the movie, I feel like, or at the beginning of our review, I feel like what separates for me the movies that I really like and the movies that I really love is that rewatchability component that... you said at the beginning, how much should rewatchability factor in your score? And it can factor in however much you want it to, because you're allowed to rate a movie however you want. But I think for me, a big thing that keeps a movie from getting to like a 9 or a 10 is the sense that it's not going to hold up on rewatch, and it's not... And I think what puts a movie in the 9 or 10 is I rewatch it and I'm like, wow, I enjoyed that just as much as I did the first time. And sometimes, like, if it's a 10, I enjoyed that more than I did the first time. Like, I think it's even more interesting. And the things that I originally thought were really well done are actually fantastically well done. And, you know, I think that's... Which I can't speak for this movie. I'm not going to... We should start always watching the movies twice for the podcast, and so then we can say if it holds up on rewatch when we review it. So I can't speak for how it would hold up on rewatch, but I do have a sense that I would probably feel similarly to you, that I think there's definitely some points in this movie where it feels a little bit like dead weight, or a little bit like the movie is spinning its wheels.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've watched No Country for Old Men, I don't know, dozens of times. A lot.
Yeah.
Same with Lord of the Rings, The Dark Knight, Blade Runner 2049, Jurassic Park. I'm just reading titles off of my DVD collection in front of me. But yeah, all of these movies, all of the movies that I enjoy enough to own, I have watched multiple times, except for... Okay, we're not going to get into my DVD collection. But yeah, I can only review the movie, as we've said so many times, basically the motto of the program. You can only review the movie based on your own experience of it. I can't review the first time I watched the movie. I have to review the movie that I experienced last night when I was watching it. But yeah, it is definitely, again, I think you should you should get out there and watch the movie, because it's 90 minutes long. And you'll probably really enjoy it. And if you never watch it again, hey, that's fine. I think most of the movies I've ever seen, I've probably only seen once.
Yes.
And it is just the special ones that you rewatch.
Yeah. That's just about everything I have to say for the movie. I guess in terms of the acting, I think all of the actors are doing a pretty good job. The guy playing Dwight, I think, does a very good job of establishing stuff. But this is another case where I think the movie gets a long ways just off of the things that make a movie a movie. Like those opening sequences where Dwight is hanging out, being homeless, and you know, cleaning himself in the ocean and stealing from a dumpster. Those are wordless. They're not really acted in any, like, there's acting in the sense that a person is in front of the camera doing things that presumably they don't do regularly. But so much of the tone of the movie is established through the cinematography and through the script and the storytelling. And so I think the actors are all doing a decent job, but I think the thing that really strikes me as being very good is the other movie pieces, that the cinematography is doing so much heavy lifting to establish a tone of the movie, that there's a lot of great shots in the movie, that I love a long shot in the sense that it's far away from the thing that's where the action is actually taking place. I love those. You know, lots of great kind of long-ish oneers. And so, yeah, I think the actors are good, but I think on a technical level, the movie is really, really well made.
I agree. I think the movie, it looks very well, very well, very good. All of the actors are turning in strong performances. I don't think anyone's bad here. It's certainly not, well, I don't know. It's not mind-blowing, but it's good. It's very good. I do want to talk about I mentioned at the very beginning of the review a character who I was a little uncertain about. And that's William, who is the youngest member of the Cleland family. He's not as, I don't know, flamboyant as his siblings or his parents. He's kind of in the background of the movie for a long time, until at the very end, he comes in at the climax and shoots Dwight, and then he kind of, I don't know, changes his mind about being, or I don't know, it's weird because it seems like he has it. This moment seems like the culmination of a character arc that hasn't actually happened, that we haven't actually seen. And maybe the movie is, again, gesturing towards depth that it didn't have the budget or the time to look into. But I just thought, at the end, he was making significant decisions and substantial decisions about his family and about what he wanted to do and how he wanted to relate to his family. But, and I think that was just a bit of a mistake because we hadn't really seen any of the journey that brought him to these decisions. So it just kind of fell a little flat for me.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I got the sense that William was meant to be almost like a look, the cycle is continuing kind of thing. That William's like a decent person, but now that he's seen someone murder his family, that he's going to go and try and get revenge and continue the cycle of revenge that revenge movies love to talk about. But yeah, I would agree that it didn't feel like it was super well done, if that was the intention, if that wasn't the intention, and he was just the person to be there to shoot Dwight at the end, then yeah, I mean, he accomplished that, but I don't think, yeah, he's another part of the movie where it feels so minimal that it's just not doing anything, and that, again, could be the could be that the director or screenwriter didn't intend for William to have any sort of character arc or be anything we're supposed to dig deeper into. But again, because so much of the movie feels very minimalist, it's hard to tell what is minimalism in, you know, just trying to be very subtle and careful about the way you treat something, and what is just, you know, nothing that we're supposed to be thinking about.
I mean, it's not a huge deal. It's just something that I feel like maybe if the movie had a bit bigger budget, it could have, I don't know, explored him in a bit more depth. And as it is, yeah, he's just kind of there. But yeah, that I don't really have that much to say, that much else to say either. With a movie this minimalist and this short, yeah. You can, right, get it done pretty quickly. Was there even, did this movie even have music?
I don't remember any score. If there was, it was only present in a couple of scenes.
Yeah. Again, very much like No Country for Old Men, which has like 12 minutes of music, half of which is playing over the end credits.
Yeah. Amazing.
Let's get to rating. Oh, yeah. Look at that. Great minds think alike.
Yeah, I can go first real quick here. I think it's a very good movie. I think if you haven't seen it, you should see it. It's a fun, not like a fun movie, but it's fun for me because I love watching indie movies like this. Because it just reminds me how great movies are and that the art of movie making is such a universal thing that anyone can get together a group of friends and a camera, and if you are talented and you have good ideas and you've got a good idea to center a movie around, you can make something very compelling and very good, because there's just something universal about seeing people in relatable sort of situations. Relatable in the sense that you can connect to the emotions a person is feeling, not in the sense that it's a situation you yourself have been in. But anyway, I think there's some points where the movie, yeah, shows its limitations, and some points where the movie feels like it's saying nothing when it's not maybe intending to say nothing. But I think overall, very good movie. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I think this movie is definitely above average. It's absolutely worth watching. Yeah, it's a fresh twist on an old idea. The acting's good. Story's good. It's filling time at points, which is disappointing. And there's some issues with characters, but on the whole, yeah, it's a very strong movie. Absolutely worth watching. I'm going to give it a B.
Nice. Let's get to recommendations. I'm actually going to change my recommendation. Just because I think I want to go in the indie direction. I want to talk about a movie that is in the indie sphere that if you haven't seen it, I think you should. If you haven't seen this movie, I guarantee you very strongly that you have never seen a movie quite like this. And that's going to be Hundreds of Beavers that I mentioned earlier. It made a bit of a splash in the movie sphere because it finally got put on like Netflix or something. I want to say it was in theaters, maybe a bit, but it was really beloved by people. And I think with good reason. It takes a bit to get going, in my opinion, but it is so weird. Again, I go back to, I guarantee you haven't seen a movie like this before. It is borrowing from a lot of different interesting places. It feels almost like a video game at points, or that it's like borrowing from video game type of storytelling and thinking. But it is another fascinating look at what you can do with not a ton of money, but with a lot of energy and time and dedication to something. And I don't know if the people who made this are currently working on anything else, but I hope they are, because this was just a fascinating movie. And it's much like Blue Ruin. It's available streaming in so many different places. So give it a look if you want to keep looking at some indie movies that are just a lot of fun and really interesting to watch.
Very interesting. I can give that a cautious second. I like that movie. I personally found it to be, unique style to be overbearing at times, but I think it's worth watching. Absolutely. My recommendation is going to be, My recommendation is going to be a movie called Leave No Trace. This is a movie came out, I think somewhat recently, like a couple of years ago, and it follows a veteran and his daughter as they live off the grid. And the reason I'm choosing it is because I think it's a very similar movie to Blue Ruin in that it takes an in-depth look at somebody who has been ruined. Like, the man at the center of the story is no longer capable, or certainly feels he is no longer capable of living in society, that he's been so destroyed by his service that he can't handle the stresses or the idiosyncrasies of normal life. And it's very touching, a very gentle story. It's got some great, right, father-daughter bonding moments. It has the same thorough, deliberate pace as Blue Ruin. It's not an action movie at all, but, right, the best things about Blue Ruin are not its action. Action is not very important to Blue Ruin. So, yeah, if you liked the movie for its character study aspects, and you want some more journeys with a character like Dwight, I would recommend Leave No Trace.
Yeah, I cannot second that one just because I haven't seen it. I will say that was a movie that I was like, oh, I bet this is similar to this. I was also thinking of You Were Never Really Here, another movie I haven't seen but have seen enough to be like,
dude, same.
I think they're similar, and I should watch it because I've heard, I think you both of those, I've heard very good things about. My philosophy professor really liked You Were Never Really Here, I think.
Polly?
Yeah, he talked about it in class one time because we were talking. Somehow movies came up, And someone was saying something about movies, like, making you happy. And he was like, actually, I just watched this movie. You were never really here. And I would not say at any point in the movie I felt happy. But it made me feel other things. And I appreciate it for making me feel those other things. Like, it was a powerful movie. It was weird. I don't know why he brought it. There was a couple of times he brought up movies. Because he also brought up Ad Astra once in class and like made fun of it for a while and then was like, have any of you seen it? And I raised my hand and was like, yeah, I really liked it actually. And he was like, oh, that's great.
Wow, what a character. Well, hey, life is hard and full of disappointments. Maybe he would agree.
Maybe. Other things you can do besides agreeing with us, you can send us an email if you agree or if you disagree. You know, send us an email if you have a movie you want us to review, or if you have a movie you want us to talk about. Thanks so much for listening to this. Next week, I think the plan is another new movie review. We're still cooking up our best of the... we're not going to keep doing decades. We're going to do pre-1960s, all movies released 1959 and earlier, I believe. So we're still cooking on that, working to make it as great as possible. So eventually that'll be coming down the pipeline, but otherwise
that's going to be a lot of historical context to get through.
all history pre-1959. I mean, you can skip some of it, right? Because surely the movies of 1910 don't require the Neanderthal humans or whatever they were doing, but maybe they do. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. We're going to be back next week, so look forward to that, and we hope you have a great week.